This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This is Case Closed, 1 hour of old-time radio crime brought to you every Wednesday by RelicRadio.com. First story this week comes from Mystery Is My Hobby. We'll hear Bullets Make Holes, their story from August 28, 1947. After that, it's the high-style murder case from Inspector Thorne, his story from August 17, 1951.
Mystery is my hobby. Ladies and gentlemen, Barton Drake speaking. For tonight's drama, I select a case history number 114 from my book, Mystery is My Hobby. I call it Bullets Make Holes.
Like I was telling you before, this fellow Ronald the Razor, we called him the Razor because that's what he mostly used to commit his crime. Take a razor and slit your throat from hairline to hairline, just as slick as a feller's skin in a catfish. Well, sir, this fellow, Ronald the Razor, escaped from the pen last week, and I got a hunch he's heading straight for this lodge. Probably cross the Pierre Marquette on the bridge below Walhalla, then sneak up along the south bank. They caught him here, you know. Started slitting throats, beginning with cabin number one, and worked his way up to number six, doing a neat job in all of them. Never would have caught him in number six, only his razor got dull, and he had to stop and strop it on the bedpost.
Barton Drake snapped shut the box of fishing flies that he'd been fondly examining and preparing for the steelhead run that was to start on the Pierre Marquette tomorrow. Slowly he rose from his chair and walked over to the fireplace where he stretched his long bones in front of its cheerful warmth, for there was still a trace of snow on the old Pierre Marquette. Slyly he winked at Inspector Noah Danton as old Charlie Ames, the lodgekeeper, concluded his gory tale when the inspector dropped his can of worms then.
What was that? Shots, Inspector. Pistol shots. Somebody screamed.
Holy pickled peanuts. Them shots, they come from cabin number six.
And now back to Glenn Langan for the second act of
Mystery is My Hobby.
That's cabin six.
Yes.
Over there.
No light, John.
No, there they go. They're on now.
Hurry up, Inspector.
I ain't as young as I used to be. Can't tell you. Here we are. Better slow down to a walk.
Yeah, yeah.
Dead, Max. Blood, horrible.
What's going on in here?
It's sand blood.
Who is this man, Charlie?
Steve Morgan comes here every year to fish, him and his pal, Max Warner. Mm-hmm. Holy buckets of buttermilk. There's Max there on the floor.
Take that gun away from him, Inspector.
You bet. Hey, you, give me that.
What'd I get? Gun.
Give it here.
Yes, yeah, take it. Blood, horrible.
Drake, this fellow Warner's a mess.
Yes. The shot went through his jugular vein. That accounts for so much blood.
45 automatic, Bart.
Yes, and 45 is always make big holes.
Max, not Max. Could have been Max.
What's the matter with him, Bart? Nuts?
I hardly think so, Inspector. More likely a state of shock. Come on, fellow. Snap out of it.
Snap out of it.
I hate to do this to you, but I...
Sorry, but you've got to come to. Morgan.
I'm all right. What happened?
That's what we want you to tell us.
I don't know.
Did you shoot this friend of yours, Max Warner?
Shoot him?
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, yes, I shot him. I must have shot him. Take away that blood. I can't stand blood.
Pull your stuff together, man.
I'm sorry. This has been an awful shock. Yes, I shot Max, but I didn't know it was him.
Yeah? Just who'd you think it was?
I don't know.
Stop saying that.
I went to bed early. Wanted to get an early start fishing in the morning. Something woke me up. Noise, I guess. Sounded like somebody raising a window. I knew somebody was in the cabin. I lay here scared to death thinking of that Ronald the Razor that Charlie Ames has been talking about for the past 2 days.
Ronald the Razor? Well, you didn't believe that yarn, did you? That's just a tall tale I tell to keep you guys interested. Holy barrels of bullfrog.
Well, this is a fine time to tell me.
Go on, Steve.
Well, as I was lying there, I heard this fellow moving around. So I reached under my pillow, where I always keep my gun, and I saw him outline in front of that window over there.
This one?
Yeah, it's the big one.
And then?
Oh, it's panicky, I guess. I pulled the trigger, and he dropped.
Yeah? But we heard 7 shots.
I know. I was excited. I guess I did fire some more. Probably empty the gun. Can't you do something with the blight? It's making me sick.
Throw a blanket over, will you, Tommy?
Yep, but I'll charge the laundry bill to Morgan here.
Then your shooting of Max is apparently an accident, is it, Steve?
Hey, he's right, Bart. There's 7 bullet holes in the floor here.
You claim self-defense, I suppose, that you shot at a prowler thinking he was somebody else.
Why, of course, Mr. Drake. Why, Max was my best friend. We've been friends for years. In fact, we've had many business deals together.
A stranger friend to sneak into your cabin, isn't it, Morgan?
Yes, I can hardly believe it. I thought he was kidding.
Kidding? Kidding about what?
Well, you see, Max and I are both numismatists.
Numismatists? What? Huh?
Coin collectors, Inspector.
Oh.
Well, I had a coin that Max wanted, and I was showing it to him earlier in the evening. Max tried to get me to sell it to him, but I refused.
And that made him angry?
No, he just laughed, and I'd better watch out, or someday I'd find it missing.
Mm-hmm. Then you think perhaps he came back here tonight and tried to steal it, huh?
Why, Mustard, that's the only answer. I wish I'd known he was that serious. I'd have gladly given it to him.
Holy cranberry cakes. I just thought of something.
Just tell her.
Max's wife. Somebody ought to tell her.
Yes, I think somebody should.
He was living in Cabin 10.
Inspector, do you want... Just a minute, Inspector. Somebody's coming.
Steve, did Max come over here? Oh.
Good evening, Mrs. Warner.
How do you do, Mr. Drake? What is all this, a clambake?
Oh, something terrible has happened.
What's the matter? Did Brown Copper go down?
Your husband was shot, Mrs. Warner.
Shot? Max? Where is he?
Under that blanket.
Still?
Yes. I'm sorry to have to tell you this.
You're sorry? What are you sorry for? I'm glad he's dead, the loss.
It's a beautiful morning, Inspector. It's a shame that last night's events will have to interfere with our fishing.
Yeah. Me with all those nice fat worms, too. I don't see why we don't forget the whole thing and let the sheriff handle it. Looks like an accident to me.
Yes, on the face of it, I'll have to admit it does. However, there are a couple of things that don't jive, and I won't be satisfied until they do.
Okay, Sherlock, what do you want me to do?
I want you to take the station wagon and drive into Ludington. That's about 25 miles from the nearest town where you'll find a telegraph office.
Well, if you just want to send a wire, why don't you phone it in?
There might be too many people listening. There's an extension in every cabin, you know. Besides, this station wagon is the only means of transportation here at the lodge. With it gone, it'll keep all the interested parties close to home.
Okay. Where do you want me to wire?
Wire the stock exchange in New York. I want to know whether Brown Copper is up or down. Let's walk around here by Cabin 6, Charlie.
Huh?
What for? Something Steve Morgan said last night bothers me. He said he thought he heard a window open.
Yeah, that's what he said.
Now, this big window here... This is the one Max said he was standing in front of when he was shot. Steve said he made a perfect target.
Would have, I guess. Anyways, head and shoulders. He couldn't open that window, though.
Why not?
It don't open. Nailed in there, solid as a tombstone.
I'm saying. Huh. How about these? I'm on the other side.
They'll open.
That's careful, Charlie. I'm looking for footprints.
I don't see none.
No. The ground is soft, too. If anyone had tried to open these windows from the outside, there'd be plenty of them. Let's go around back.
Ain't no windows there. Nothing but the back door.
We'll go around there anyway. You know, Charlie, it's a funny thing.
What is?
Why anyone would take the trouble to come in through the window when the door was unlocked all the time.
It was?
Of course. Don't you remember last night when we heard the shots? We ran over here and walked right in.
Oh, well, now, ain't that a pretty picture?
Oh, hello there, Drake.
It depends on what you call pretty.
I was just installing Jill here.
Rather fervently, don't you think, Morgan?
Oh, well, it's been an awful shock to her and...
Oh, nuts. See, why don't you tell him the truth? He'll find it out anyway.
Well,
Steve and I are in love, Mr. Drake. There's nothing any of you can do about it.
Well, I'm sure I wouldn't care to. That little accident last night seemed to clear things up tremendously, didn't it?
Yes, there was a lot of things.
Tell me, Mrs. Warner, did your husband know that you and Steve were carrying on a love affair?
Of course he didn't know. Steve and I were too clever for that.
I'm beginning to wonder if you were quite clever enough.
What do you mean by that?
I'm not sure that I know. Yes.
Don't get any funny ideas that the shooting wasn't an accident. The sheriff gave me a clean bill of goods last night when he came to get the body.
Well, I'm not disputing the accident theory. Yet.
Just stop saying that yet.
Sorry, I didn't get you. Just shooting in the dark.
Yes, something like you did last night, eh, Steve?
What, you did? Oh, I'm sorry, Jill, but this guy gets my goat.
Use your head. That's what he's trying to do. And now, Mr. Drake, when is that policeman friend of yours coming back?
Oh.
Steve and I want to use the station wagon.
He'll be here almost any moment, I suppose. What do you want to use it for?
We want to go into Ludington and get married.
Holy bales of bananas, and your husband's body ain't even cold yet.
What's the difference? There's no reason to kid anybody.
I'm inclined to believe you're right. You'd better get married right away. That is, if you ever expect to get married at all.
And now, back to Glenn Langan for the third act of... Mystery is My Hobby.
Well, Inspector, am I glad to see you back.
Yes, I had to wait a while at the telegraph office for an answer.
What did you find out?
Round Copper is down, brother. And I mean down.
Down, eh?
The very bottom.
Well, come on, Inspector, tell me. I know you well enough to know that you'd find out why it was down.
Well, Brent, it's this way. You see, this fella that was killed last night, this Max Warner and his pal Steve Morgan, had a corner on that stock.
I see.
Yesterday, this Steve Morgan wired his broker to unload his entire interest. He did. Sold at a big profit and broke the market.
But Max didn't unload his stock.
No, Steve left him holding the bag. Must have wiped the guy out.
Well, this is really beginning to stack up, isn't it?
Well, I don't see how. If Steve pulled a dirty trick like that on Max, then Max would have been the one who would have been gunning for Steve, not the other way around. The way it happened.
Well, that could have been it, Inspector.
I get it. Max finds out that his pal has sold him out and sneaks over to Steve's cabin to get even. Steve sees him prowling around in the dark, thinks he's a thief, and shoots him.
Right.
Well, anyway you figure it, it still comes out the same. You can't pin a murder rap on Steve.
Well, it seems to be it, Inspector. If Max had received any word of what Steve has done. I wonder.
Oh, Charlie. Charlie Ames.
Yeah?
Will you come over here a minute, please?
What do you want, Drake?
Charlie, Max Warner was here at the lodge all day yesterday, wasn't he?
Yep, he was.
You'd know if he made any long-distance calls, wouldn't you, Charlie?
Yep, all long-distance calls has to be okayed by me, personal.
That's what I thought. Did Max make any or receive any yesterday?
Nope. Holy piles of pancakes. What are you getting at?
Did he receive any wires?
Nope, nary a one.
Well, what do you think of your theory now, Inspector? Apparently, poor Max never learned that he'd been double-crossed.
Which puts us right back where we started from. Well, at least the poor guy died happy.
Oh, you'd better go in and get your lunch, Inspector. We all had hours and hours ago.
Yeah? What are you going to do?
I'm going over and have another chat with the occupant of cabin number 6.
Hello there. Anybody home?
I'm right in, Mrs. Ray.
Oh, it's you, Mrs. Warner. I rather expected to find Steve.
Steve's out getting the station wagon. We're going into town to get married, remember?
Now, I hate to be a party to the curtailment of such sweet happenings, but I'm afraid, my dear Mrs. Warner, you're not going anyplace.
Who's going to stop me?
I am.
You and who else?
Now, really, Mrs. Warner, you can do better than that. Such a trite little place.
What's the matter with you? What have you got against Steve and my getting married?
Well, nothing. Nothing at all. Only I'm not sure that Steve knows what he's getting into.
It's a nasty remark.
Yes, I know. And I also know a nastier one. A little thing called murder.
Don't make me laugh. You couldn't prove my husband's death wasn't the result of an accident.
I can only prove it was murder now, but I knew it was murder from the very first.
How did you know?
You tell me.
Well, suppose it was murder. I mean, even if it was, that has nothing to do with me. I didn't shoot Max, it was Steve.
You're such a refreshing young lady, Mrs. Warner. Starting to turn on your lover already.
Well, I'm not going to a chair for something he did.
I'm afraid you are, my dear girl. There's such a thing as an accomplice. That also can carry the death penalty, you know. Now, will you come along peaceably, or shall we go to meet you at Quorum Moor, or do I have to use force?
I'm not going anywhere.
I think you are.
Does this look like it?
Yes, sir. Another automatic. You and Steve must have brought out an arsenal.
And I'm a better shot than Steve, Mr. Drake. I wouldn't advise you to make any false moves.
I see. Well, certainly you don't expect me to just keep on standing here.
No. You're going to get in that closet. You're going to stay there till Steve and I can make our escape.
Really, I don't believe I care to. I imagine that closet's rather stuffy.
Get in there, Mr. Drake, or I'll shoot.
I don't believe you would, Mrs. Warner.
Just try me and see.
I'm coming after that gun. Yes, I believe you would.
Now get in that closet quick.
All right, all right.
And don't try to break out, at least not until after we're gone. If you do, next time I'll shoot to kill.
Huh. Well, as good old Charlie Ames would say, holy miles of mustard. There they go. Happy bride and groom. I hope the good inspector heard that shot. There's nothing like a shot to make him come a-running. I guess I could bust out of here at that. The place is too small. I can't get... Run for it. Charlie's got staunch cabins, good solid oak. And that lock's no easy mark either.
Hey, Mark! Mark!
I don't see nowhere.
Mark, where are you? Are you all right?
In here, Inspector.
Where, in the closet?
Yes, unlock the door, will you?
I can't. There ain't any keys.
Then shoot out the lock. Hurry.
Okay, keep your shirt on and stand out of the way.
Go ahead.
For that, holy gallons of gula.
Charlie, those closets of yours weren't built for comfort.
I heard the shot while I was eating my pie. Charlie and I rushed out just in time to see our friend Steve drive up to the cabin in the station wagon, and his girlfriend come running out. She gets in, and they drive away like mad. What's up?
Mrs. Warner, the little vixen, stuffed me in the clothes closet like an old stuffed shirt.
What? You let a dame...
Listen, Mark. It isn't funny, Inspector, when you're looking into the open end of a .45.
Yeah. You mean it was the gal that took a shot at you?
Well, she pointed something at me and it went bang. I don't believe it was her finger.
Holy cases of candle.
Don't mind that now. Which way did they go?
Turned right, up on the road, probably crossing the West Bridge. That'll take them right into Ludington.
No, they won't go to Ludington. They'll realize that all we'd have to do to catch them would be to telephone the sheriff there. What other way could they go, Charlie?
Well, now, let's see. After they get across the bridge, that's about 2 miles down the road, they could double back and go east. There ain't another town that way for 60 miles.
You mean they'd have to come back this way? Only on the other side of the river?
Yes, I guess they would.
Bart, if we only had another car, we could maybe catch them. That is, if we had a bridge up here to get across the river.
Yes, but we haven't got a car and there isn't a bridge. You'll have to think of something better than that, Inspector.
Say, I got an amphibious jeep. Bought it at the surplus sale. Use it for fishing. Why, it'd cross the river like a duck.
Well, what are we waiting for? Come on.
To do, Inspector. You better hold on. We're going into the river.
This is for me, Bart. I'm going to buy me one of these things.
The current's taking us downstream, Charlie.
All right. We'll come out right about here. Now, we can just miss a few of these trees.
Whatever you do, get us over to that road in a hurry, Charlie.
Okay.
Here in time. Drive the jeep right out onto the road, Charlie. Make a roadblock.
Not me. That station wagon's my property. And if them two idiots don't take an urge to stop, I'll lose both the station wagon and my jeep.
Nope.
I'm going to stop her right here.
I'll stop them. I've got ways.
Well, all we can do is try to... By George, we made it. Here they come.
And look at them come. Holy cow, they must be doing around 80.
Wait here.
I'm going to try and wave them
down. Mark, come back here. Mark!
Stop!
Mark! I'll shoot out the tire.
Yes, Inspector.
Fire the minute she smashed.
Turned over 5 times, I counted.
What a mess. What a mess.
Well, there's nothing we can do for them now.
The poor devils. Even if they were guilty of murder, that's a horrible way to die.
And now, now back to Glenn Langan for the conclusion of...
Mystery is my hobby.
Now, Bart, would you please tell us what this is all about? Before we all went off on that moving picture chase, I thought that you thought that Max Warner's killing was an accident.
Oh, I'm surprised at you, Inspector. You should have seen the minute we walked in that cabin that it had to be murder.
You mean you knew it all the time?
Certainly.
How?
Well, the way I see it, Inspector, Steve Morgan and Joe Warner came down here with the express purpose of killing Jill's husband, Max.
Premeditation, huh?
Mm.
How do you figure that out?
Because of the fact that Steve unloaded his brown copper before Max was murdered. Say, what would you suggest as the best fly this time of year, Charlie?
McGinty, best fly for the spring.
Good. Tell me more, Bart.
Hmm?
Oh. More.
Well, Inspector, on the night of the murder, Steve invited Max over to his cabin to look at a rare coin. And Max came still thinking that good old Steve was his pal. When he got there, Steve simply pulled out his automatic and shot Max. Dead. So you think of McGinty as the fly to use, Charlie, eh?
Hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute. If what you say happened, how about the lights? Max wouldn't come into a dark cabin if he was just on a visit.
But the cabin wasn't dark, Inspector. Not when Max arrived.
It was, too. We saw him turn on the light when we were running over here.
Well, now, Inspector, if Steve could turn on the light, he could also turn it off, couldn't he?
Well, he...
You forgot that we were in the room here with Charlie Ames when we heard the shots. It would have been a very simple thing for Steve to turn off the light before we could run to the door. Charlie, what weight leader would you suggest?
Oh, about 10 pounds.
Seems to me that's all theory. You haven't any evidence that would stand up in court. I could think up a pretty story, too.
About 10 pounds, you say, Charlie? Hmm?
Yeah, look, Bart, how did you know it was murder?
All right, Inspector. All right. How many shots does a .45 automatic hold?
7.
Mm-hmm.
That is 7 in the clip. Could hold 8 if there was one in the chamber.
And how many shots did we hear?
7.
Then I could safely say that there wasn't an extra shot in the chamber, couldn't I, Inspector? Inasmuch as the gun was completely emptied when you took it away from Steve?
Yes, you could safely say that. And so could I.
Thank you. And how many holes were in the floor of Steve's cabin, Inspector?
7.
And how many in Max's neck?
1.
And where did that 1 come from?
Why, the one in the chamber.
But we couldn't safely say there was one in the chamber, could we, Inspector?
Oh, no.
I think I'll borrow that amphibious jeep of yours, if you don't mind, Charlie, tomorrow.
Where did the 8th bullet come from?
Hmm? Oh, there wasn't any 8th bullet, Inspector.
Well, then how...
That's how I knew that Steve Morgan was lying. You remember that Steve said he was awakened by a prowler who stood between Steve's bed and the window that couldn't be opened because it was nailed shut.
Yeah, he said that all right.
Steve swears that he shot at the prowler's head, which was silhouetted against that window. The shot going through Max's neck.
Yeah, that's right.
Then where is the hole in the window, Inspector? If the bullet went through Max's neck, there would have to be a hole in the window. Bullets do make holes, you know.
Well, I'll be...
No, don't say it, Inspector. There's more to come. When Max came in that night, Steve knocked him down and shot him on the floor.
Yeah.
Then he emptied his gun. There were 7 bullet holes on the floor and 1 in Max's neck.
Uh-huh.
That bullet, you see, making 2 holes. Then he turned off the light, waited until he heard us coming, and turned it on again. He wasn't very clever, Inspector. No, he wasn't very clever at all.
Yeah.
You know, Mr. Drake, that killing reminds me of the time that Harry the Hatchet was stopped in here.
Oh.
Terrible fellow, Harry the Hatchet. Why, one night he started chopping up people, started with cabin number 15. Well, sir, he hacked his way all the way down to cabin.
No.
Huh?
That's enough, Charlie. Your stories are too obvious.
What do you mean, obvious?
Obvious fabrications, nothing subtle. In other words, Charlie, they're just plain, bare-faced whoppers.
Well, holy boxes of bear meat.
I like intrigue, Charlie. After all, you know, mystery is my hobby.
And now the National Broadcasting Company presents Inspector Thorne in The High Style Murder Case. Tonight, the National Broadcasting Company presents the exploits of the spectacular young Inspector Thorne of the Homicide Bureau. Those investigations rank with many of the most celebrated ones in the annals of crime fiction. an investigator smart enough to claim he is dumb and modest enough to believe it. Tonight, Inspector Thorne turns to the High Style Murder Case. It is late one afternoon in the private office of Madame Florette, head of Florette Incorporated, one of the most famous dress houses in the fashion world. Madame Florette, distinguished by a reputation for fanatical honesty, is young and beautiful despite her fantastic success. But she seems disturbed as she turns to her secretary and speaks the words that lead to terror and murder.
Lucille, I'm ready to see Stephen Marsh now.
He will be happy, Madame Florette. Monsieur Stephen has been waiting for an hour. Madame Florette will see you, Monsieur Stephen.
Thank you, Lucille.
Wait outside, Lucille.
Oui, madame.
Stephen, I'm not going to beat around the bush.
What is it, Madame Florette? Hasn't my work been satisfactory?
Don't put on such an innocent air. You've been padding accounts, Stephen, stealing from the firm.
Don't squirm
and lie, you thief. I have the proof right here. I hired you in the first place only for the sake of your mother.
But I don't care
how long your mother's been working for me. You're a thief, and I'm going to turn you over to the police.
No, you can't do that. I made a mistake. I lost some money in a deal, and I had to pay it back. I got in deeper and deeper, but if you'll only give me another chance.
There's no excuse for dishonesty, Stephen.
Well, then please give me some time, Madame Florette. I'll pay you back, but don't wreck my whole life and think of Mother. It will break her heart.
Very well, Stephen. I'll give you until tomorrow morning to pay back all the money you stole.
Tomorrow morning? But, Madame Florette, I can't raise the money by then.
If you don't, Stephen, I shall turn you over to the police. Now leave my office before I call my manager, George Harmon, and have you thrown out. Oh, it makes me ill to look at a thief.
And now, the next morning, we see Madame Florette's secretary, Lucille Valois, coming to work. Passing through the outer rooms and entering Madame Florette's private office.
Good morning, Madame Florette. I have...
Madame Florette! Help! Murder!
What is it? What's the matter?
Monsieur Harmon, someone has killed Madame Florette. She's dead. Stabbed in the back with a scissors.
What?
Get the police. Oh, get the police.
Why don't the police get here?
It's only been 10 minutes since we called them, Lucille.
Oh, Monsieur Harmon, I shall never forget the terrible sight. My poor Madame Florette lying in a pool of blood.
Oh, stow it, Lucille. You didn't give a hoot for Madame Florette.
Listen to the big, important general manager talking. You better be careful, George Harmon.
And you better quit putting on that act when Inspector Thorne gets here. Thorne's hot stuff, and he'll see through you like a pane of glass.
I'm not afraid of Inspector Thorne. Maybe you are, George.
Me? Why should I be afraid? Keep quiet, Lucille. Someone's coming. Inspector Thorne?
Yes, I'm Thorne. This is my associate, Sergeant Muggin.
Morning.
Inspector Thorne, I'm George Harmon, Madame Florette's general manager.
How do you do, Mr. Harmon? Is this the lady who found the body?
Yes, I am the one.
What is your name?
Her name is Lucille Valois.
Mr. Harmon, let Miss Valois speak for herself. Go on, Miss Valois.
Yes, Inspector Thorne. I was poor Madame's secretary. I entered her office this morning thinking to find her working, as always, when I see her lying by the side of her desk, stabbed with a big pair of dressmaker's scissors.
I see.
Oh, it was horrible, Inspector Thorne. I scream and run out, right into the arms of Monsieur Harmon here. I'm so grateful Monsieur Harmon is here early in the morning. Earlier than usual.
Hey, what are you saying, Lucille?
She said you were here earlier than usual, Harmon. Is that true?
No, Inspector Thorne. That is, I sometimes come in this early.
But not often?
Whenever I have special work to do.
And just what is your work here, Mr. Harmon?
Well, as I told you, Inspector Thorne, I am Madame Florette's general manager. I select all the materials we make our dresses from. This morning I had to arrange a dinner for some buyers.
Ha! A matter of an hour.
What are you trying to do, Lucille? Get even by making me look suspicious?
Get even for what, Harmon?
Ah, I spoke out of turn, Inspector Thorne.
It's your turn now. Go on.
You shouldn't take Lucille seriously, Inspector Thorne.
Don't you insult me, George Harmon.
Half the time you don't know what you're saying, Lucille. You get so worked up.
Oh, really?
She's as temperamental as a tiger, Inspector Thorne. And right now she's sore at me because I told her she was dramatizing herself.
I'm no genius, Harmon, but I've had plenty of experience telling facts from fancies. Is that Madame Florette's office?
Yes, Inspector Thorne.
Let's have a look, Sergeant Muggan.
Okay, Chief.
Well, there's the body. Nasty sight, Muggan.
Yeah, pair of scissors in her back.
The scissors must have gone straight to Madame Florette's heart.
Lucky for her. I've seen him where the murderer had to stab her half a dozen times.
Save it for your memoirs, Muggan. Desk light on. She must have been working late. Have a look at this paper on her desk, Muggan.
It's a notice of a shipment of dresses from Paris clearing through customs today.
Yes. Apparently she was killed in the middle of a job. Working till the last.
Died with her boots on, huh?
I'm not so sure of that.
What do you mean, Chief?
Take a look at her shoes, Sergeant Muggan.
So?
I'm no expert on women's clothes, Muggan. But I've noticed most of them won't go out of the house in certain color combinations.
Yeah?
Then how come a fashion expert like Madame Florette is wearing black shoes with a navy blue dress? Even the average well-dressed woman wouldn't wear that color combination.
Hey, Chief. That's right.
Who's that?
It's me, Lucille Valois. I have something to tell you, Inspector Thorne.
All right, Miss Valois. I'm through here anyway. Sergeant Muggan, while I talk to the secretary, Lucille Valois, you check the building employees. Find out if anyone came in here late last night.
Got you, Chief.
Now, Miss Valois, what is it?
If there is a murder, the police, they look for people with a motive, no?
Yes.
Then it is my duty to tell you that yesterday, Madame Florette sent for a young man who works here, Stephen Marsh.
Stephen Marsh?
Yes, Inspector Thorne. I overhear their conversation. Madame has found out that Stephen Marsh was padding accounts, stealing.
Stealing?
Yes. You see, Madame is a holy terror about honesty. She was furious with Stephen.
I shouldn't wonder, Lucille.
She said she was going to turn him over to the police. He pleaded with her, and finally she gave him till this morning to return the money.
You certainly got an earful, Miss Valois.
I did not listen on purpose. They were talking so loud I could not help hearing.
I have a few questions for you, Miss Valois. You're French.
But of course.
I suppose Madame Florette hired you so she could speak her own language with someone?
Not at all, Inspector Thorne. Madame Florette was no more French than you are.
Is that right, Lucille?
You see, a French name is supposed to be good in the fashion business.
Yes, so I've heard. How long did you work for Madame Florette?
It is 2 years now. Oh, that it should end like this. You will arrest Stephen Marsh?
We have to find him first.
Oh, Inspector Thorne, there's Stephen's mother, Mrs. Marsh, just coming in. Maybe she knows where he is.
Stephen's mother?
But yes, she works here as a fitter.
Oh, Mrs. Marsh, good morning, Lucille. I'm sorry I'm so late. I had a terrible night. I want to see Madame Florette. Please tell her I must see her right away.
Madame Florette? But don't
Miss
you
Valois,
know...
Miss Valois, will you step outside, please?
Certainly, Inspector Thorne, if you wish.
Now, Mrs. Marsh, why did you want to see Madame Florette?
It's a personal matter, sir.
Is it about your son, Stephen?
Who are you?
I'm Inspector Thorne of the police.
The police?
I suspect you want to see Madame Florette to plead for your son, whom she caught stealing.
You know about Stephen?
Yes, Mrs. Marsh.
But Madame Florette promised not to tell the police till this afternoon.
So I've heard.
Inspector Thorne, please. Please don't arrest my son, Stephen. He'll return the money. Stephen's a good boy.
I'm not interested in arresting Stephen for padding accounts, Mrs. Marsh. It's a matter of murder.
Murder?
Madame Florette has been stabbed in the back with a pair of scissors.
Oh, no.
And I'm sorry to say your son Stephen's in it up to his neck.
No, not Stephen.
Where is your son?
Where? I don't know, Inspector Thorne.
When did you see him last?
I saw Stephen last night. He came home after work, told me what happened, said he had seen Madame Florette, and that she had given him until this morning to pay back the money he'd stolen.
And then?
Then he went out.
Where did he go?
I don't know. To try to raise the money somewhere. Stephen wouldn't kill anybody, Inspector Thorne. Maybe he's weak, but he wouldn't kill anybody.
Still, he didn't come home all night?
I'm sure Stephen can explain. I'm sure he can tell you exactly where he went.
I suggest you try to find him, Mrs. Marsh.
I will. I will.
Inspector Thorne.
What's up, Sergeant Muggan?
I've got something in the next room you ought to see.
All right, Muggan. If you locate your son, Mrs. Marsh, you'd better tell him to give himself up.
Where can Stephen be? I've got to find him. Why didn't he come home? I've got to think. Where can Stephen be? The phone. I'm not going to answer. I've got enough on my mind.
Oh, Mrs. Marsh, that phone calls for you. Will you take it in there?
For me?
Yes.
All right, I'll take it, Lucille.
Well, Mrs. Marsh, I leave you.
Who could be phoning me? Hello?
Hello? Mother?
Stephen, where are you?
I'm home, Mother. I just wanted to tell you goodbye.
Goodbye? Stephen!
I can't face it, Mother. I'm going to end it all, and I just wanted you to know that I thank you and love you.
No, no, Stephen, wait for me. I'm coming right home. We'll talk it over then.
It's no use, Mother. Goodbye.
Stephen! Stephen! I've got to stop him. I've got to do something. Inspector Thorne, hurry, help me.
Mrs. Marsh, what is it?
It's my son, Stephen. He's going to kill himself. You've got to save him, Inspector Thorne.
Where is he?
At home, 2 West 9th Street.
Let's go, Sergeant Muggan. Here's the Marsh apartment, Sergeant Muggan.
The door's not locked, Chief.
No one in this room. I smell gas. Quick, Muggan, the kitchen. Open the kitchen door. Blazes filled with gas. Open the window.
Yeah.
And there's Stephen Marsh, lying by the stove with the gas jets open.
I'll turn off those jets, Chief.
Stephen isn't even unconscious yet.
Go away. Let me die.
Come on, Stephen. Sit up.
Who are you?
I'm Inspector Thorne. This is Sergeant Muggan.
Why didn't you let me die?
I don't think you really wanted to die, Stephen.
What?
I may be dumb, but I think if you really wanted to commit suicide, you wouldn't have telephoned your mother and then taken such a slow way out.
I did want to die, I did.
Then what's this monkey wrench doing at your side? Isn't it there to break a window in case we didn't arrive to rescue you and you felt yourself passing out? Isn't it?
I was crazy. I thought I'd get some sympathy.
By staging a fake suicide? Pretty tough on your mother, wasn't it?
I couldn't face being jailed for a thief.
For a thief? Or a murderer?
A murderer?
Yeah. Madame Florette was bumped off last night.
What, Sergeant Muck? Well, I didn't kill her. I wasn't near the place.
No, Stephen. Here's a page from the notebook of the office building. Everyone who enters or leaves after 5 is supposed to sign in.
Well, what of it, Inspector Thorne?
You signed this book when you entered that building at 9 p.m., Stephen. When you came out, you tried to erase your name and sign a phony name over it. But the erasure is obvious.
I'll tell you the truth, Inspector Thorne.
That's a new idea.
Let him talk, Sergeant Muggan.
I did steal some money from the firm, Inspector Thorne. Madame Florette threatened to turn me over to the police unless I paid it back by today.
Go on, Stephen.
I tried to raise the money, but couldn't. So I went back to the office last night to plead with Madame Florette for more time. When I got there, she was already dead.
You expect me to believe that?
It's the truth. Listen, I wasn't the only one who had something against Madame Florette.
No?
Oh, why don't you get after her secretary, Lucille Valois?
Why?
Because Lucille is nuts for the general manager, George Harmon, that's why. And Madame Florette stole Harmon away from her.
Holy cats.
As you say, Muggan. Well, on your feet, Stephen. We're going back to Florette Incorporated to find out which one of you is lying.
Inspector Thorne in The High Style Murder Case will return in just a moment. But first, it's the Silver Jubilee on NBC. Tonight, be sure to hear Mr. Keene, tracer of lost persons, as he brings you the story of the Poisoned Sandwich Murder Case. And here are a few reminders about Sunday evening's radio features. First, there's Tom Conway as gentleman detective Simon Templar, alias the Saint. Then screen actor Lloyd Nolan brings you another hard-hitting story as Martin Kane, Private Eye. And actor Carlton Young comes to the NBC microphone in the double role of Philip Galt and the Whisperer. Then, later Sunday evening, join Mr. Moto on another adventure in the realm of international intrigue. Then, on Thursday evening, we present a new idea in dramatic radio entertainment. We call this program Dimension X, and it features stories dealing in time and space, which ask the radio listener to use his imagination and envision himself in the world of tomorrow. Well, there you have it, a brief rundown of the programs you soon will hear. Programs designed for the best in summer radio entertainment, and heard on this, your NBC station. Now, back to Inspector Thorne and the High Style Murder Case. Madame Florette, owner of Florette Incorporated, internationally famous dress house, has been found murdered, stabbed in the back with a pair of dressmaker's scissors. Investigating the murder, Inspector Thorne finds that Madame Florette had threatened a young employee named Stephen Marsh with jail for stealing money from the firm. Inspector Thorne has questioned the murdered woman's French secretary, Lucille Valois, her general manager, George Harmon, and Stephen's mother, Mrs. Marsh, a fitter at Florette Incorporated. Suddenly, Stephen Marsh stages a fake suicide, and when faced with this, he accuses the secretary, Lucille Valois, of the murder, saying it was well known that Madame Florette had stolen the man Lucille loved, the manager, George Harmon. Now we see Inspector Thorne confronting the secretary and saying,
"Now, Miss Valois, I'm told you're in love with the general manager, George Harmon."
"In love with that pig? Don't make such a joke."
"I expected you to lie to me."
"But it isn't a lie, Inspector Thorne. George Harmon is not my type of man, I assure you."
"Strange. It's common gossip around this dressmaking establishment that when you first came to work here, George Harmon gave you a big whirl and that you liked every minute of it."
"You're naive. I flirted with George for the sake of my job."
"You dated George Harmon 4 or 5 evenings a week."
"You're a busy man digging up dirt."
"Murder's a dirty business, Miss Valois."
"I had nothing to do with the murder."
"You were the first to find Madame Florette's body."
"So?"
"And as far as we know, the last to see her alive."
"That doesn't mean a thing, Inspector Thorne, and you know it."
"But this does, Miss Valois. About a year ago, George Harmon stopped taking you out. He became very cozy with Madame Florette."
"I didn't care. I was tired of George."
"Is that why you tried to resign?"
"What is that you say?"
"Credit the police with some sense, Miss Valois. We've checked the office files and found your letter of resignation. You told Madame Florette you wanted to leave for personal reasons."
My mother was sick."
"Your mother has been dead for 5 years."
"All right. George threw me over for that woman, for Madame Florette. I could not bear to see her every day."
"Yet you changed your mind, stayed on the job."
"Well,
Did you figure you might win George Harmon back?"
No,
"And after a year of waiting in vain for George Harmon, did you decide to clear the way by stabbing Madame Florette with a pair of scissors?"
"You are cruel. You have made me tell my dearest secrets, and now that you could think I'd do something so horrible."
I don't think you need that handkerchief, Miss Valois. When you cry, there should be tears."
"You beast."
"Excuse me, Inspector Thorne."
"Yes, Sergeant Muggins."
"A crate of dresses from Paris just arrived from customs. They're marked personal for Madame Florette."
"Yes, and I told you I'd take charge of those dresses, Sergeant Muggin."
"They're marked for Madame Florette, Mr. Harmon."
"That is right. Madame always wanted to open the new dresses herself, alone. It was a rule."
"Rules or no rules, Florette can't open them now, Lucille. With your permission, Inspector, I'll just take over and open the crate."
"Why so anxious, Harmon?"
"I'm not anxious, Inspector Thorne. I merely want everyone to realize that I'm the boss now."
"Sergeant Muggin, bring the crate of dresses in here."
"Okay, Chief."
"Oh, this is ridiculous. I've always been second in command here."
"Until the murder's solved, I'm the boss, Harmon."
Here's the crate, Chief.
Open it, Sergeant Muggin. You can pry it open.
I'll just get a couple of these nails out. There she goes.
I'll take off some of this paper.
Well, my old lady will get a kick out of this. Me, seeing Paris frocks hot off the boat.
Oh, this is the most ridiculous performance.
Is it, Harmon?
What possible connection has that crate of dresses got to do with Madame Florette's murder?
Answer this one, Harmon. Why did Madame Florette always open the shipments alone? This green dress on top is nice.
Nice? Oh, it is a dream.
That's the word. I don't think so much of this number.
Well, Inspector Thorne, now you're a fashion expert.
Maybe I'm not, Harmon, but these big rosettes look hideous to me. And they feel heavy, too.
Heavy?
Much too heavy for a lady to wear in comfort. I'll just tear one off.
Hey, you can't do that. You're ruining the dress.
Just as I thought, Harmon. Hidden in this rosette are diamonds.
What?
Diamonds?
These dresses contain a shipment of stolen jewels.
Impossible. Madame was honest as a day.
Madame was in the business of smuggling stolen jewels in the dresses she imported from Paris, Lucille. That's why she opened these crates alone.
Chief, you mean all that blather about honesty was just a front?
Exactly, Sergeant Muggin. Madame Florette was a clever crook who built up such a reputation for honesty that no one would suspect her of operating a racket on the side.
I can't believe it. It's absolutely incredible.
Then you never had a suspicion, Harmon?
Not a glimmer.
I'm wondering why you were so anxious to open this crate yourself.
Well, if you're thinking I knew about this smuggling business...
Didn't you?
I'm a respectable American businessman. I was a success in the dress goods market before I ever came in with Florette. You can look up my record.
Now I see, George. Now I see why you left me for Florette.
Be quiet, Lucy.
Oh, no. You can't tell me you didn't know what was going on. You and Madame Florette were as thick as thieves.
You don't know anything about it, Lucille.
I know all about it. I saw you with your heads together, whispering,
Lucille,
looking guilty.
Shut up, I said.
You can't stop me from talking, George.
Well, talk if you want, you fool. What you don't know is, Florette and I were secretly married.
Married?
That's why you saw us with our heads together, whispering, Lucille. That's why we were so thick.
A secret marriage.
Florette wanted it that way, Inspector Thorne. She said it would be bad for business. Now I see. She must have been afraid I'd find out about her stolen jewel racket if we lived together openly.
Don't believe a word of it, Inspector. A husband knows his wife's business.
You've tried to get revenge on me long enough, Lucille. Maybe you were in the diamond smuggling racket with Florette.
Me?
Those dresses came from Paris, and so did you.
That's enough from both of you. Come on, Sergeant Muggin. We have work to do.
Right you are, Chief.
Well, what a case, Muggin.
Yeah. Half of them are crooks, Chief. First the kid, Stephen Marsh, who stole money from the firm. Then Madame Florette, who's supposed to be so honest. Now maybe the manager, Harmon, and the secretary, Lucille.
We'll find out about them, and fast. Cable the Paris police, Muggin. Find out who represented Madame Florette in Paris and shipped those dresses to her.
Gotcha.
When I know who was working with Madame Florette in the diamond smuggling racket, I'll be ready to move in on the killer.
And so, some time later in the office of the dressmaking house of Florette Incorporated, we hear Inspector Thorne say...
Are they all here, Sergeant Muggin?
Oh, gang, Inspector Thorne. I'm the manager and the secretary, Lucille. Young Stephen Marsh and Stephen's mother.
I'll go in and see them.
Well, at last, Inspector. I'm beginning to wonder about American justice.
You needn't wonder, Miss Valois. If you're innocent. Mr. Harmon.
Yes, Inspector Thorne.
I've been working with the Paris police. They've picked up the murdered Madame Florette's confederate in France. This confederate has confessed and implicated a gang of jewel thieves we've been after for a long time.
And me?
You are in the clear, Mr. Harmon.
Inspector Thorne, I apologize. I should have had more faith in you.
Do you mean George is innocent of the diamond smuggling?
I do, Miss Valois. Now, you, Mrs. Marsh. You worked here as a fitter. Did you ever fit Madame Florette's personal gowns?
Always, Inspector Thorne.
When did you do it? After hours?
Yes, sir.
And did you fit a new dress on Madame Florette the night of her murder?
Why, no. I never went near her.
Mrs. Marsh, you're lying. When I saw the body, Madame Florette was wearing black shoes with a navy blue dress.
Madame would never wear such a combination.
I thought not, Miss Valois. So the only explanation is that she was trying on that navy blue dress for a fitting.
Maybe I did fit that navy blue dress on Madame Fleurette the night of the murder, but I didn't kill her.
I get it, Inspector Thorne. Mrs. Marsh must have done it to protect her son, Stephen. She must have begged Fleurette not to expose her son for stealing money from the firm, and when Fleurette wouldn't listen, Mrs. Marsh stabbed her with those scissors.
Mother, Mother, you didn't...
No, no. I did plead with Madame Fleurette for my son, and she wouldn't listen. But then...
Yes?
Someone else came in, Inspector Thorne, and sent me away while I was still fitting her with a navy blue dress.
Who came in?
Take my advice, Mrs. Marsh. Don't say another word till you get a lawyer.
I don't care what happens. I've got to talk, Mr. Harmon. He's the one who came in, Inspector Thorne. George Harmon.
Ridiculous.
Quiet, Harmon. Go on, Mrs. Marsh.
Afterwards, Mr. Harmon came to me and said he'd see that my son Stephen wouldn't be prosecuted for stealing that money. I kept my mouth shut.
I thought so.
I didn't know it was a case of murder, Inspector Thorne. And when I did find out, I was afraid to talk.
The woman's mad.
Oh, no, George Harmon. You were much too anxious to open that crate of dresses containing the smuggled diamond.
What's this now, Thorne? You said yourself I was cleared of being in that smuggling racket.
But I didn't say you didn't know about it.
What?
You found out about the diamond smuggling racket the day of the murder, Harmon, and made a beeline to Madame Fleurette to have it out with her. You were in such a state you couldn't wait for Mrs. Marsh to finish the fitting of that navy blue dress.
That's ridiculous.
You argued with Fleurette. Then you went wild, picked up the scissors, and stabbed her in the back.
No!
You found out she was going to double-cross you. That she was getting ready to fix things so that if her diamond smuggling racket was exposed, it would look as though you, her secret husband, were the crook.
You can prove it.
Can't I, Harmon? The Paris police have talked to the French detective you hired when you began to get suspicious of your wife, Fleurette.
All right, Inspector Thorne. You've thought of everything. I'm not sorry I killed Fleurette. She deserved what she got. I loved her, and she only married me for a sucker. She was just trying to find a fall guy.
Instead, she found something she didn't bargain for. A murderer. Take him in, Sergeant Muggan.
And so ends the high-style murder case. The part of Inspector Thorne is played by Carl Weber. Direction by Kenneth McGregor. The script was written by Carol Warner Gluck, based on the original story by Frank and Ann Hummert. This is Fred Collins inviting you to tune in again next Friday at this same time when the National Broadcasting Company will present Inspector Thorne in The Mastermind Murder Case. Stay tuned for Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, next on NBC.
That's Case Closed for this week. If you want to find more from Mystery Is My Hobby, Inspector Thorne, thousands of other old-time radio shows, all the other podcasts, and everything else Relic Radio, just visit RelicRadio.com. If you'd like to help support this and all of the shows, help keep them coming every week, give that donate button a click. We've got some downloadable sets for certain donation amounts. Any amount is always helpful, and thank you for it. That's it for this week. I'll be back next Wednesday with another hour of old-time radio crime on Case Closed.